have no idea what loss is.
You have no idea what loss is.
I reckon it's got something to do with that girl.
It's got everything to do with that little girl.
I can take care of myself.
How many close calls have we had?
Can't be any worse out there. Can it?
Every guy in this room is staring at you right now. Maybe they're staring at you. Maybe they're jealous of you. I'm just a girl. Not a threat.
Oh, Ellie. I think they should be terrified of you.
Welcome to the world of The Last of Us. It's Entertainment Talk's podcast for the Naughty Dog video game series and the HBO On Max and Sky Atlantic television series. I'm your host, Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is David. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you very much.
Good, good. This is for Season 2, Episode 5. It's the one before the penultimate episode. We are almost already at that point. It feels like yesterday when the show started. Season 2, Episode 5 for The Last of Us, Feel Her Love. I won't sarcastically ask you if you felt her love, because I don't think that quite works, but did you love the episode? Did you like the episode? What did you think of it?
Yeah, I enjoyed the episode a lot. There was a nice mix of sort of action bit pieces, and, you know, we moved the story forward. We got to see Ellie starting to get some revenge. I mean, there was a couple of bits that you kind of, the moment they mentioned one particular thing, you were like, oh, we know where Ellie's going to end up then. You know, so yeah, I rather enjoyed all of that. I mean, we've seen a little bit more of the groups as well. Still don't know a huge amount about the Seraphites, but we are seeing a little bit more of them, more of the wolves. Yeah, I mean, overall, some good stuff across this, I thought.
Nice. So yeah, after my usual process, which is that this is the last kind of piece of that, because I have to kind of go through this process every week of kind of, well, don't have to, I choose to. But yeah. Doing the, okay, because there's just different things I watch for on, different things I look for, sorry, on different watches. And I felt myself doing that more, even more so on this episode, like I was trying to focus on different stuff. Because when I came away on, if you want to call it Sunday night, and did my spoiler-free review, the one thing I kind of came away from was like, okay, I know I really enjoyed what's in this episode, but because it threw me off because of certain stuff that it did, I didn't quite grab all the initial enjoyment out of it. And then because with, like, let's say the second watch, and I go in and I know the structure, not necessarily knowing like the things that are going to happen, but knowing kind of where things are going to come up, and I was able to kind of enjoy certain moments more. And then in the third watch, it was kind of okay, try and enjoy like the nuances of those moments and sort of the smaller details, because there's always so many like small details and stuff, and not just in the case of what the characters are doing and like what these sets look like and things like that, is also winks and nods and little Easter eggs towards like the gamers as well, like little bits that we kind of recognize. So there's just, at least I'm finding, at least there's a lot of different, and maybe I've got my own particular way of watching it, there's a lot of different kind of things to look out for. That's not the sole reason that I do three different watches. It's because obviously we have three podcasts and then we sort of go from there. But by the time I finished the third watch, I loved the episode and thought it was awesome. I don't know if I don't know which of these episodes I should kind of compare to each other, because I think literally so far, 1 through 5, they've all had their own different goals and their own different kind of things that they need to do, and that means that the episodes are kind of different. So I feel like kind of comparing them is almost not really fair, but this has more similarities to episode 4 than kind of any of the other episodes, because of the whole Seattle so far, day 1 and day 2, this being the second day, and kind of what they set out to achieve with that. I've kind of gone back and forth in the last couple of days on like, okay, do I like this more? Because it seems it's had more similarities to episode four and the goal of what these episodes are trying to do. I've gone back and forth on like which one do I prefer. It ultimately doesn't matter because I love both the episodes anyway. But they both just have different Seattle day set pieces, and I like them both kind of equally, I think. It's just with, I think with episode four, because you had slightly less remixes, and also remixes that some of the gamers, including myself, were thinking were going to happen, and then you get sort of part of this episode has to get back on track with less remixes, but then it also gave us some that we didn't expect. Like, just for example, when I'm going through this episode and I'm knowing that the Nora stuff is very likely to come up, I'm like, okay, at some point, and this is kind of what I was thinking on the first watch because I didn't know how it would happen, at some point we've got to get rid of Dina and Jesse. Like, they have to separate from Ellie at some point, and just having the joy of figuring out, like, okay, because they're doing it differently and they're throwing gamers off in that way, I found kind of very interesting. And then even within those bits, there's like different remixes as well. So, which I talked all about that on some of the spoiler predictions this week. So yeah, and of course, in terms of the actual episode, like you said, we get more of the Seraphites. There was something particular I noticed. I should have noticed maybe on my second watch, but I noticed more on my third watch. There's a particular mechanic going on there that I will try to remember to bring up when we get to that scene, of just a little game difference that I noticed there as well. So I'll talk about that, and then yeah, we kind of I love the way this episode ends in terms of just. One of the things I've consistently said that The Last of Us is very, very good at is, and this is in a vice versa situation, either giving you like, hey, remember this, really nice moment between characters, and that can be either through flashbacks or through current day. So, for example, the music store, that was a sort of, hey, look at this lovely, happy moment between these two. Make sure you savor it because you know sooner or later we're gonna go to back to bad stuff, and then when it's back to bad stuff, you kind of flip it that way. And I've never really thought it was a sort of, let's say, tonal problem, because I know that there's certain media out there that they don't know how to do that. They don't know how to kind of, not comedy, but go from like happy times to bad times. And that doesn't always mean it has to be a 0 to 100 swing each time. But particularly with again, the way they end this episode and the sort of transition and the difference between those two Ellies, I thought they did that fantastically well, because they do that sort of stuff in the game as well. They'll show you like a really dark bit reaching its kind of full peak, and then they'll either cut to something in the present day or a flashback or something, and show you kind of, hey, now back to some light-hearted stuff. And it's kind of, I think that's one of The Last of Us across the whole series, games and show, is one of the best, one of the many things it's best at. So just ask you as well, what do you kind of think of the way The Last of Us, not just in this episode, but the way The Last of Us kind of does the sort of dark to happy, happy to dark kind of thing? What do you think of that?
I think generally they've been balancing it pretty well. I mean, it's not seemed jarring in any way so far. I mean, a lot of the sort of light-hearted stuff tends to be sort of jokey kind of things between Dina and Ellie. There's been quite a lot of that, is those sort of conversations, and they seem to have transitioned that quite well, without sort of, huge jumping backwards and forwards between scenes, or you've stuck with one person quite a lot. So, I think they've done that sort of stuff pretty well. I think that's handled it okay.
Yeah, definitely. And just on the Dina Ellie stuff, not only do I think that's great for these sort of happy moments, like the sort of some of the stuff at the theater, and obviously some of the stuff at what do you call it, the guitar music shop scene. It's also it's also, and I think this is the because of the way that Isabella and Bella I keep forgetting their two names are very similar. Is it because of the way that Isabella and Bella are playing Dina and Ellie? There's like a cuteness added in there, but it's not. It's also not turning into a sort of, YACW sort of, oh my Archie kind of thing from Riverdale. It's not. It doesn't feel like that either. So, yeah. Obviously, with Riverdale, they kind of intended to do that because they know that people love that kind of stuff over there, but what works differently over here, I think. And yeah, I just like the way they did that in this episode as well. So but yeah, we got Ellie to talk about with the ending bits, we've got the Seraphites to talk about, and a whole bunch of other stuff. So let's take a break here. We'll tell you what else we've been up to on Entertainment Talk, and then come back and do the recap. We'll see you for that in a minute.
Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system which is usually in the bottom right hand corner to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talk's podcast and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show.
Alright, recently on Entertainment Talk, there was a little trailer for a little game released last week for Grand Theft Auto 6. Of course, it came out the day after last week that we recorded the podcast, so we just caught up with that this week and talked about Grand Theft Auto 6's second trailer. It's been delayed to May something, can't remember what it is, 2026, so basically a year from now. So yeah, it gives developers a choice of, okay, you can either try and get your game out within the next year or a month or two after GTA 6. It's up to you now, kind of thing. So we talked all about that, and then obviously talking about what's actually in the trailer as well, and my sort of talked about my kind of gameplay hopes for it as well. I talked about a Battlefield. There's going to be a new one revealed this summer, and I talked about how what it could do for itself and could do to butt up against Call of Duty and to inject some much needed competition there. We also talked about IP in a sort of general sense in terms of what some companies are doing with their IP. In terms of game stuff that we've been playing, Robert talked about Expedition 33, which I know a lot of people are really, really enjoying right now. I talked about putting down Naughty Dog Games because my podcast project is out, which we'll talk about in a minute, and jumping back into the world of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Over on the world of Last of Us, I did, because David, you mentioned this week that you mentioned on Geektown this week that we have the 3 Last of Us podcasts. Those are, yes, the spoiler-free review that I do immediately after I've seen the newest episodes, and then the day after, do the second podcast, which is the one I'm about to mention. That's the spoiler predictions one, that is taking everything I know about the game, everything we have had so far in the show, things that haven't come up yet, and things that are yet to come. So the 3 different sort of categories there, and to make spoiler predictions from that, and also to make spoiler discussion about different parts. I predicted in this one for obviously the next episode, season 2, episode 6, all the way up to season 3, episode 1. Sort of took like what could happen for episode 7, which will be the finale, and how that might lead its way, let's say, into season 3, episode 1. There's a few different options there, so I talked about all of that, so that was fun to do. Over on, of course, World of Last of Us, there is, of course, my Season 2, Episode 5 spoiler-free review, if you still want to go listen to that. Speaking of Naughty Dog Games, my podcast project is now out. It's actually just over an hour long. I thought I would actually talk longer than that. It's called Ranking / Discussing Naughty Dog's PlayStation Video Games Important Distinction. They did make games before they released Crash Bandicoot 1 on the PlayStation 1. But just focusing on Crash Bandicoot 1 all the way through to Last of Us 2. There's 15 games in total. I'm not going to name all of them here. That's what that podcast is for. But ranking all 15 of them. Talking about a development through line that I kind of noticed. And just talking about Naughty Dog's video games. There's also no spoilers for any of the games in that episode as well, so you can check that one out. That was really fun to do. Over in the United cast, Premier League games aside, we have, I don't know how it happened, we are in a cup final, which I also need to mention something for this podcast as well. So next Wednesday at 8, which is when we usually record, for these podcasts, is the exact same minute that we're going to be kicking off in the Europa League final against Tottenham. Now, of course, I can't watch that and talk about The Last of Us Season 2, Episode 6 at the same time. So we will have to move the episode probably to a Thursday. I hope that that works out. We will discuss that a bit later. I didn't know the cup final was on a Wednesday because I can't remember the last time a cup final was on a Wednesday. Usually they're at weekends. The Europa League itself isn't even on a Wednesday, it's on a Thursday. So when they showed that, I was quite thrown off by that. So anyway, we've somehow got to a cup final. So the two teams that are currently sitting 16th and 17th in the Premier League are in a cup final of a different cup. Work that one out if you can. Anyway, we beat Athletic Bilbao by 4-1. And we'll see what we can do next week against Tottenham on Wednesday. Weird season, but football's weird. And then, yeah, that's pretty much what we've been doing on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. Let's get into some news. No, wrong podcast. Let's get into the recap. Season 2, Episode 5, Feel Her Love. In Seattle's Lake Hill Hospital, WLF, or Wolf Commander Hanranahan questions Sergeant Elise Park, who led an operation with her son Leon to clear the hospital's basement B1 and B2. Leon had informed her the patrolman had discovered the cordyceps has become airborne. It's in the air, she tells her, and told his mother to seal them in. Hanranahan commends Elise's decision and says only a slick few will know about the fungus's airborne nature, as the hospital is too important. And as she walks off, because I know I've just mentioned the sun bit there, you don't know that in the scene, and these are also two completely original characters, so the game people don't know that either. Just as she's about to leave the room, just drops it in there and says, sorry about your son. And then we cut to the opening credits. I think this is a fantastic way to introduce this. It gives it a specific plot purpose, which we will see more of later. And we will also see more of later, but more on that much later, if you know what I mean. Because of course, with spores, of course, it's not a spoiler because it's part of this episode, which I assume everybody's watched if you're listening to this. Because we didn't have them in Season 1, and there was no kind of... Because I'm realising what Craig and Neil are doing, particularly Craig, obviously, is writing these episodes at the moment. I know Neil is writing 6 and 7 with Craig and Hallie Gross. Is trying to specifically use things for strictly narrative purposes, because people have moaned about, like, oh, you cut this bit out, you cut that bit out. One thing just to kind of clear that up, though, we're not just kind of cutting things. Some things are being moved as well. So one of the things I do on my spoiler predictions is take a look at something we've maybe gone past and pick, okay, has it been cut, moved, or trimmed in you know, how's that all kind of working out? Right, so yeah, that's what we've kind of been talking about a little bit on the spoiler predictions, again, where things have been moved to or cut or trimmed or whatever, and the particular gameplay aspect, and things that do and don't serve a bit more of a kind of narrative purpose, so we've been sort of talking about that. But yeah, it's the perfect way to introduce spores, because you kind of really did need them for the, obviously we'll talk about it later, but the Nora scene later, you couldn't really have that happen in kind of a different way. But yeah, just that the way that line's dropped in there, I'm sorry about your son. And it's like, it just all kind of clicks together in that moment, right? Of like, this guy that she's had to leave down there and everything. So, but yeah, because in season one, and again, there's the discussion on the whole, okay, HBO doesn't want, you know, Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey's faces covered with gas masks. That's how you get through these bits in the game. Your characters carry gas masks with them, and they had to kind of find a way around it, not just in season one, but all the way up to here. But yeah, I think the way that they've introduced this is pretty much perfect, and I love the way that it gets shown later on. Anyway, David, what did you think of our opening scene here?
I really like this. It's kind of brutal, the sort of, you know, when she's talking about it, and she's talking about, you know, sealing this guy down there, and that last line of her turning around going, sorry about your son, you're like, ooh.
Yeah, that's, just adds that extra weight, and yeah, wow.
Yeah. I mean, the introduction of it's airborne and it's in these levels is like a massive signpost to where Ellie's going to end up at the end of this episode. But apart from that, it is, I really like this kind of opening. I'm reading a little bit about their sort of decision to not use spores and have the cordyceps like transmit a slightly different way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, it wasn't only the sort of, you know, HBO obviously not wanting the actors to cover their faces. There was a certain amount of that, although Neil and Craig agreed with that. It's going to be a pain to having them wear masks to cover the performances. But also, Craig was of the opinion that it's a lot more difficult to explain, because it makes the virus spread, the infection spread a lot more easily if it's airborne. So it actually sort of made more sense for them to have a different mechanism as being the primary mechanism for it, and this be a sort of evolution of that in sort of little pockets. So I sort of get the point of why they've done it this way and introduce the spores this way. I think it does make more sense, you know, because I mean, if it's not only airborne, if it's spores, it gets carried on clothes and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, you know, it would spread a lot more than it, you know, in the real world than it realistically probably did in the game world. So I get the point of why they're doing that. It's not just about the fact that it obscured the actors' faces. But yeah, I think this is an intelligent way of introducing it and gives them another version of it to play with as well. This sort of airborne version, and also gives sort of almost a unique superpower to Ellie on top of, mm-hmm. you know, what she had before. So yeah, I mean, I thought that was just a really well done introduction to the spores and the fact that it's airborne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I love the, like, not just the idea of the inclusion of this, but the actual plot point and the story of what's going on here, I think is a really, really good way to kind of do that. I just now thought, this has just come up fresh in my mind, and I can't talk about it because it's a spoiler. And I've spent a lot of time talking about one of the episodes where this could come up. But I've just now thought of a scene that they maybe could do. But anyway, more on that later on. I just thought about it kind of on the spot. So anyway, then I also think there's a really nice transition into the intro as well. Like you drop the line, they give each other a look, they close the door, and there's the intro. It's just really, really good. Good bit of editing and structure. So, all right, after that, after confirming Nora is in Lake Hill, Ellie and Dina begin their second day in Seattle, hence the Seattle Day 2 in the corner. Again, that gets displayed in the game by, you get a black screen, you get your name of the next chapter, and you proceed forward. Seattle, by deciding to pass a warehouse that the WLF Avoid. Along the way, they encounter more dead Seraphites, making Ellie question bringing Dina, which I'm glad that happened. I wasn't quite sure. I'll explain something in a second. I wasn't quite sure where they were going with certain bits, which again is where my distraction in my first watch, sort of, you know, when I was trying to figure out certain bits that they were doing, was interesting to bring up. Anyway, Dina reiterates her commitment to help Ellie's quest for revenge, citing a childhood memory when she killed a raider who had murdered her mother and sister. And then we have this scene here. So you'll note that I've put two particular little notes in here. These are just my own kind of bits that I thought of. I can't quite tell. Now, there's an area that you go through on your own, I think pretty much in this same sequence, which is called Hillcrest. Now, Hillcrest is a very gameplay-heavy section. And again, you've got to kind of remember the idea for TV that... Because when you're going through Hillcrest, which it could take you 15 minutes, 30 minutes, maybe 45. It depends how you play it and how stealthy you are and whatever else, right? As much as it would have been excellent to see that in here, through that whole process, Ellie exchanges no dialogue with anybody. There's no narrative thing pushed forward. It doesn't do anything necessarily with the story until it gets to a certain point. It's just a gameplay piece. But why I put Hillcrest Remix, not only do I think this is supposed to be the same area, because it looks a bit like it. And when they were sort of like showing different camera angles and I was looking at the area, and I was like, okay, it kind of looks a bit like Hillcrest, but not completely. So I wondered if that was their way of injecting this here. Anyway, that aside, it's very, very interesting that, Dina actually finally mentioned this, because... If you remember back in episode 3? Yeah, episode 3, you know, when they emerge from the forest area and they're both talking about their past and who they've killed, and we realised in that moment that Dina didn't talk about her first kill. Ellie sort of skips her first one because that's, I think, supposed to be Riley, and then she talks about the another one. Now, there's a difference being done here with Dina's character, which I've not really got an issue with necessarily. I don't think it's made this version of Dina worse or better, to be honest. Dina in the game is actually Jewish. Now, there's been absolutely no mention of that so far in the show. Now, when you get to Seattle Day 1, and if you remember the slightly big area that you get to, and that's where Dina got her pregnancy test, that's where the music shop was, and you could tell there was kind of a big area there. Again, a bunch of stuff in there that doesn't sort of... They have conversations with each other, obviously, when you're moving around in the game in Seattle Day 1. Because you kind of spend time going through two or three different areas looking for gas because there's a gate for you to unlock. That's basically sort of the main purpose of that. And then you pick up ammo and collectibles and, you know, do the gameplay thing, which again is not necessary for the show. You're not going to see Ellie picking up like, oh, here's 5 bullets. I'm going to, you know, Bella Ramsey's going to bend down and pick up a case of bullets or something. Yeah. Anyway, they get to an actual synagogue and they have various Jewish things in there. And that is kind of where this conversation more comes up. And then they come across like, some other stuff. Some of it is a bit too long to explain, but I'm trying to give you the sort of short version of this. And she brings up essentially the same story about her sister and about her mother, and both of them were killed in bad ways, so it's very, very similar. Now, part of me does kind of wonder, okay, because Neil Druckmann himself is Jewish, we did a whole podcast about it called the Israel-Palestine situation. I'm not going to go over all that again because we talked about that for an hour. If you want to hear that discussion, you can go back in your podcast feed and check that out. It's the one before the season 2 spoiler-free preview. And I kind of wondered this whole time, and I did talk about this a little bit in the spoiler predictions, as to, okay, has this been cut, moved, or trimmed? Turned out it had been remixed and moved, because it had been moved to a later point, which is this, which is Seattle Day 2, and it's also been remixed. I'm going to answer the question myself in a moment, because I think I've got a particular, not a definitive answer, but my own opinion. Why do you think that, because you've got this mostly the same version of Dina, and now the whole sister mother being murdered by someone that was my first kill conversation has now come up. Why do you think maybe they didn't include the Jewish thing in this version of the story?
I get the purpose of including it in the game if they had a synagogue in the game and that happens to be where they end up and that's where that conversation happens. It makes sense there. If you're removing that section out of the TV show because it doesn't make sense in terms of, you know, it just doesn't fit in with the sort of linear narrative of the TV show in terms of somewhere where they would go. You know, they have gone from the, you know, they know where they need to get to. There's this warehouse in the way, they're going through that. And it makes sense for the conversation to that happen there. There's no real need to bring it up what her religion is, I would have thought. So I think it's probably just unnecessary plotting, I think, because it doesn't add anything to the character at that point anyway. So, and we've seen no evidence of her being particularly devoutly Jewish in one way or another. So I don't think there's much purpose to it in terms of, and it doesn't really say anything about her character, so why bother including it? I think it just from a narrative point of view, I don't think it's needed, so why bother? Hmm. You know, that would be my guess with it. I mean, there may be another reason for cutting it out entirely. It may be that they're sensitive to, you know, the various situations going on right now, and they thought it's just gonna add something which isn't there. So I mean, that would be another reason to cut it out, but I think ultimately I think it's probably more just narrative. The location is different, the situation is slightly different. It's just not needed to bring that up, you know. I mean I think that is probably the reason, I would guess.
Mm. In terms of the actual conversation, I think this is a great point to move it to, because of like where Ellie's got the slight questioning part in, and then because obviously Dina ends up with like, yeah, I would have hunted that person forever, essentially, kind of. So it keeps that, it helps that ball to move forward. On the Jewish thing, I completely agree with you in terms of like, okay, this version of Dina, is it completely necessary for her to be Jewish in this version of the story? And currently, no. And who knows, maybe it gets brought up later. But I think if you were going to include it, I think you would have done that by now, given how much Dina screen time we've had. I also do think, because I was about to mention the same thing you just did, because there's already so much noise around the whole, whether you want to say Israel, Hamas, or Israel-Palestine, or whichever one of them you want to point out and bring up, that whole situation, and because that is, you know, let's say very politically noisy at the moment, whether, you know, right, wrong, and, you know, and again, going back to the Isaac conversation, I'm not playing chicken and egg with you today on like, hey, you broke this, then you did, you know, blah, 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 back and forth, yeah, whatever. Very politically kind of noisy. And I wonder if it's maybe been removed for that, because the show just doesn't need that noise towards it. Because you've already got people kind of, you know, not Naughty Dog itself has already had, let's say, too much of a history of being threatened by, and they're not fans, being threatened by people for, like, you know, just story choices, or for Abby, or for what she did to Joel, and people threatening to kill Neil over that. And so I just don't think they need that on top of everything else that happens in this story. Plus now with the show, you've got like people hating Bella for different reasons, and it just becomes very, very noisy. So I think this is a good way to, not to bow down to the haters, but just to not add unnecessary noise and just to just try and help the people enjoy the show more, I think, rather than it being backs against the wall of kind of, instead of people just enjoying, and obviously it's a very dark thing, it's difficult to enjoy at points. I know I've been there. Rather than it being distracted of, instead of people enjoying the story, they're just so concerned about like the noise that's caused all the hate around stuff. So maybe that's why. But after this conversation happened, I kind of threw in the bin the idea of, okay, maybe they'll move it to a different point. They already moved the conversation, they just slightly remixed it. So I think it's maybe for both reasons. So
yeah. I mean, I think that's sort of more of an added bonus to them, possibly, is taking it out. But I think narratively there is just no benefit to mentioning her religion particularly. It doesn't add anything to the character. It doesn't take anything away from the character. So why put it in there in the first place? I mean, it makes sense in the context of the game because of the location they were in. When you've moved the location, there's just no point to have it there. So I think narratively it makes zero sense to actually have it, and it has the added benefit of removing that noise out of it as well. So yeah, I suspect that's probably why.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it still doesn't take away from like what Dean has gone through, and that kind of
her mother and sister being murdered, that story still very much stands, and it fits with the narrative that we're following with the TV show. So
And just by the way, to give credit to acting, Isabel doing that speech, which by the way Craig mentioned on the official podcast that she spent like months not practicing it but kind of trying to get better at it and remember it and things like that. So big credit to Isabella for pulling that off and everything. So and just on some other bits as well, I love kind of the like they both kind of had their moments in this conversation, Ellie and Dina, and then the way like Ellie touches her face and then they hold hands and then they have the just the way that whole moment came together, I thought was really, really well done. So very, very good. Just before we get to the warehouse, even though I'm going to mention a scene that happens in there, Dina hears something as she's going through. I wrote down here, why doesn't Ellie notice? Is she distracted by her need for revenge? That's just what I kind of noted down. Before we get to what Dina might have heard and what you think that is, why do you think that Ellie maybe didn't hear that? Do you think it is because she's distracted?
Yes, possibly. I'm not sure with that.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe.
So yeah, just to kind of go back a little bit to the first scene. So B1 and B2 are mentioned, and as Craig mentioned on the podcast and teased, and Craig, I hope you know what you're doing here, because of what this leads to later. B3 is not mentioned, and we also see later on in the chase that there's a part of one of the bits of that is very, very locked down. Obviously don't expect you to know, but David, what do you think might be down there?
Yeah, now I have, because I've read a little bit up on sort of this about, I don't know exactly what's down there, but this is obviously something big that is in the game that is locked on level B3, which presumably we'll get to at some point, or we may get to at some point on the TV show. Because I think on the sort of like there's no information on what's on level B3 right now, and so I don't exactly know what's there, but there's obviously some sort of game thing. Maybe it's a boss of some description, or I mean that would be my guess. Apparently it is something that is in the game, but we haven't seen on screen yet. So that I'm sort of intrigued by.
Just the way that Craig teased that, Craig, I hope you know what you are doing, because if you don't do that, you've now set yourself up quite badly. So I hope you've had conversations with Warner Brothers and HBO about that, and that you can actually do what that might be. Who knows? Maybe there's nothing down there. Maybe it's absolutely fine. There's nothing down there at all, and they just locked it off for caution. They just locked it off for caution. One of the kind of interesting game bit remixes is, I'm not going to say where it is, the where you hear something was moved slightly, and I found that to be, because that again was another bit that kind of, oh, they're putting that bit in here, that's interesting, because I expected it at kind of a different point. So anyway, they walk away from that and move on. We will maybe revisit that later. At the warehouse, Ellie and Dina are ambushed by several intelligent infected known as stalkers. Ellie offers to put herself on the line while Dina runs to safety, because she can get bit a lot. So it does that. But they're narrowly saved by Jesse, who had pursued them to Seattle with Tommy. So we don't see him, but there's a mention that Tommy is around somewhere as well, which is also important. The three evade the WLF, who stop when they enter the local park controlled by the Seraphites. Ellie, Dina, and Jesse. I should have moved this and saved this, actually. We'll get to that in a second. I'm just going to move my notes down, because there's plenty to talk about here. I loved seeing kind of, again, there's multiple great parts of this. The sort of initial conversation with Ellie having the attitude of, oh, so you think I'll mess it up? And Dina's like, yeah, I kind of think you'll do that every time, because you sort of have that so far. Also the little bit about, okay, you're a bit mad, but that's why I love you. And then they sort of have the moment there. I noticed as well on, I kind of half noticed it on the first watch, but I definitely noticed it on the second and third one, when Dina says to her, oh, I love you, and then Ellie sort of pauses the conversation about, okay, going in there and infected. She pauses, she has a bit of a look. There's a little bit of light, like blue light, that actually flashes just over the top of Ellie's head. I don't know if that was intentional or if that was just the way it happened, but it almost kind of struck me, and Last of Us is very thematic in this sort of sense, if that was sort of, you're about to enter a dark situation, but Dina, who is next to you, she's like your ray of light. Maybe they didn't intend that at all, but it was very interesting timing, the way that sort of came up on screen. Like she pauses, she smiles, and again, going back to like the flip of the happy and the bad stuff, they're about to enter a very bad situation, and they know that, but there's just this conversation which brings up this little ray of light. Then there's literally a bit of light that comes through the window. So I don't think they mentioned that on the official podcast. That's just what I took from it, so could be wrong, could be right. But when you usually ask Neil Druckmann these questions of like, hey, you showed this, was it intentional, his answer is always, well, what did you think? And that was what I took from it. So that was great.
Yes.
So very good. Just on the conversation, what did you think of them sort of planning and then having this nice moment between them?
Yeah, I mean, I love these little moments between Ellie and Dina. I think they work so well together, those two. I'm really enjoying that relationship. You know, I mean, it was fun having her and the sort of grumpy Joel in season one, but you know that I like this is Dina's quite light, and you've got this sort of interesting relationship between the two of them where they're both a little bit jokey, and actually Ellie's the slightly more serious one sometimes, but then Dina's sometimes slightly the more serious one, so they work really well off each other, I think. So yeah, it's really sweet, this little conversation.
Nice. Then they go in there, they're saved by Jesse, and man, I love the kind of, they're sitting there and then they peek over the thing and then like, oh, there's one, and it kind of does its stalker thing of, oh, you spotted me, I'm gonna like scurry around somewhere, and then there's another one, and then they turn around, and then there's like six more. And even I, as somebody who was like, okay, I'm pretty sure Dina and Ellie survive this because they have to do other stuff that happens in the game, even I was looking at this of like, well, how are they getting out of this? There's loads of them. There's absolutely loads of them. And then because the moment for me where the kind of, okay, now we're in massive trouble, was, okay, Dina runs out of ammo and the cage starts to be pulled back. Because, mm-hmm. Okay, you then can't park that character there while Ellie runs off, because Dina would be in massive trouble, but then, Ellie gets into trouble. And then, of course, Jesse shows up. I love the little kind of silhouette thing of, okay, this manly-looking person kind of comes over. Ellie has this bit of a moment of sort of, maybe thinks it's Joel or something in some kind of, he's kind of, and Craig mentioned that as well on the podcast, because you get this male-looking figure that comes over. He's got the boots on, got the trousers on, things like that. And you could understand from, let's say, Ellie's mental state of being and whatever, that she would maybe think of that. Now, there's some very interesting remixes with that in of itself. The pickup, because the turns the flashlight off or whatever, and it's actually Jesse instead. Now, I mentioned Hillcrest earlier. When you get to the end of the Hillcrest section and you get into a classic Naughty Dog run and gun style set piece, which they're known to do from the Uncharted games onwards, and you jump over this ledge near the end to kind of get away from the WLF, and there's dogs chasing you and all that kind of thing. And you get there, it transitions seamlessly into a cutscene. Someone grabs Ellie from behind. She realizes after a few seconds, okay, if this person was going to kill me, they probably would have done that. Jesse shows up in that moment. He says something a bit different. He says, okay, do you think I'd let you do this on your own? Now, given that we skipped, in quotes, over Hillcrest and you don't have that moment, that's definitely that. Again, that's not a remix of that. That's kind of, okay, how can you move that part of Jesse saving them, or Jesse saving just Ellie in that moment, and have Jesse be there at the right time? That's definitely where they've moved that from there to there, which time-wise is kind of almost in the same spot. They just happened to be at the hospital instead of Hillcrest. Mm-hmm. There was a very crafty thing they did in one of the trailers for the game, where, of course, you're not supposed to know that Joel is dead, and they do some very crafty editing with different stuff. And they originally showed that in the trailer as Joel. And it's and you could kind of tell looking back that Joel's head placement on this body doesn't quite look right. It's not like a deep fake or an AI thing. It's just the way that they've done it. And Joel shows up and says, do you think I'd let you do this on your own? And of course, everybody lost their minds. They're like, hey, Joel's popped up here in the story, not knowing that he's dead. And it was a way for them to kind of swap things out. So I would say that's definitely that moment put here instead. So anyway, what did you think of the scene, and what do you think of moving the saving moment, I suppose?
Well, I mean, yeah, it makes sense because they're in a different location in terms of moving the mm-hmm. saving moment. I mean, when you first saw the sort of outline, I did wonder if it was maybe Tommy, which would also have made,
I didn't think of that, yeah,
a certain amount of sense. But Jesse showing up, I think, makes perfect sense for this bit. You know, because he is the one that is sort of, you know, attached to, particularly to Dina. And, you know, so that sort of makes a lot of sense that he's the one that shows up to save them. But yeah, I mean, Tommy was the other person that I thought it may well be there. But yeah, I mean, it's good, you know, you've now introduce them back. We know that Tommy is around somewhere as well, even though we haven't seen him. So I'm intrigued to see, is Tommy out in the out with Jesse in the game at that point, or
yes and no? Okay. Sort of at different points. Yeah
okay,
but it's very, very good in this episode that they just because Tommy has some things that he needs to do. And he cannot do those if he's at Jackson, basically. And the longer and longer we went on, everyone was freaking out of like, oh my God, they've cut Tommy's story and we're all going to freak out. And it's like, all right, calm down.
Yeah.
So it's good that as soon as he mentioned that, I was like, cool, that sets him on that track to do the things that he's going to do. But he sort of, meets Jesse at certain points, but then is also on his own at certain points. So we'll see how the show handles that as well. But that's very good. I guess because for me, I was kind of waiting to see where the Jesse you think I'd let you do this on your own moment popped up, so I didn't have Tommy in my mind. Whereas, because, again, the manly figure pops up, you know, in the cover by the spotlight sort of thing, you thought it was possibly... That's very interesting, because you wouldn't have been expecting Jesse to show up anywhere, whereas I was wondering where that might pop up. So, interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. Again, love the stalkers. I love the kind of just... Yeah, the way they're doing them in the show, I think, is really, really cool. So,
yeah.
Very, very good. But yeah, they get chased away to this park. Ellie and Dina and Jesse witness the Seraphites disembowel a WLF soldier who, of course, pleads for his life. But there we go. The Seraphites shoot Dina in the leg with an arrow, and Ellie creates a diversion while Jesse carries Dina to safety. Ellie discovers the hospital is nearby and continues her journey alone. So the thing I was talking about earlier, I'm glad I remembered to mention it. So in the game, they cut the bellies sidewards, go in with the other hand, and pull the person's guts out.
Right. Yes, and proper disemboweling. Yeah, yeah.
So when I watched this the first two times, I was like, oh, okay, because maybe he's done it downwards, that's why the guts are falling out. Now, I didn't notice this little touch until the third watch. He slices down, and then there's like a... Because remember, he's using a hook. I know you can't see that when it's in the belly because you can't see the hook. I kind of maybe forgot that he was using a hook or something like that. And then there, he drags it down. I know this is very violent to describe, but it was part of the point, right? And then he does this little flick, and the guts don't actually fall out of his belly until the little flick. So I wondered if, like, okay, instead of... I mean, we might see a... Homelander style, well, not Homelander style. Nobody's going to be punching through anybody's body in this. Nobody's that strong in this show. It just reminded me of that kind of gut punch that we get in, like, Invincible and The Boys. So we might see that later on, but I didn't realize, like, okay, that is the actual reason I think the guts have actually come out, because of the... It's almost like he hooks the guts with his knife and then, like, flicks them out, so he bleeds all over the place. So yeah, we got the hint of this in, what was the previous episode, wasn't it? Yeah, where they went to the TV station and you saw that had already been done to like four or five different soldiers. So that was great to see. Again, love the kind of all the whistling bits and pieces, and then them saying all their different stuff about she'll guide us. And yeah, brilliant video game to TV translation. So yeah, I'll save my... remixes talk for a minute, because what did you actually think of the scene?
I mean, it's brutal. I mean, again, shows the Seraphites not in the greatest light. But I mean, as we said last week, the wolves aren't exactly, you know, saints either. So, yeah, I mean, neither side is coming off particularly well at
chicken
this
and
point.
Egg, yeah.
Yeah, and we've still, we've just got sort of Ellie and Dina trying to get through the whole thing. So, yeah, I mean, it does show the sort of brutality of it, and this sort of, you know, clearly they are religious nutcases, this group. And, yeah, I mean, but say the wolves have obviously not great either. So, you know, yeah, I mean, interesting little scene. And I mean, the fact that the wolves were kind of like, you know, they ran towards Ellie, Dina and Jesse run towards this park, and the wolves hold back when they get there and were like, we don't go into that territory.
No-go zone, right? Yeah, I thought that was very, very cool. So,
yeah.
Of like, hey, yeah, leave these guys to the Seraphites, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Something kind of interesting to connect those two bits, because if you notice, because it happens here and in the game, the Seraphites confuse, in quotes, Ellie, Dina, and Jesse for wolves. And given that you've just gone from our group running from the WLF into a zone that they don't want to go into because the Seraphites are there, to then have the Seraphites, because obviously they don't know who Ellie, Dina, and Jesse are, and they're dressed in more normal clothes, so, you know, in the dark they would kind of maybe look like WLF soldiers, possibly. To then confuse them for the group that they've just ran from, I think that's very, very interesting. Because even when you're going through the game and you're trying to pick off these Seraphites and like, hey, the wolf killed this person over here, but you're just playing as Ellie. So I always found that kind of interesting touch in both situations. Again, remix from the game. Dina and Jesse aren't in this part in the game.
Right.
So because how Dina gets kind of, and I like to use the term parked, is because Dina never comes out of the, at least until she doesn't come out of it at the moment. Because in the game, Dina's more sick from the pregnancy. They kind of have this, because they still do all the trial. I know we didn't really kind of talk about the scene, but the triangulation part, Dina still does that and then says, hey, Ellie, you should go off to this part on your own, because Dina's just like too sick to go anywhere. So you have the remix where Dina gets shot in the knee and comes with Ellie, first of all. I guess it's so that you can have Isabelle's Dina in scenes with Ellie, and then you can do the different, that's where you can do the murder discussion and everything else that they had. And then Jesse, like I said earlier, pops up when you escape from Hellcrest, which is the bit after you go from the Seraphites woods into, I'm pretty sure it's into the Hillcrest, do that, then you meet up with Jesse. So they've kind of, again, not cutting or trimming, you're just moving things around, and I think it works for what they wanted to try and do with the show. So that was good. Also, so when Dina gets shot in the knee with an arrow, there's like a gameplay introduction part. Ellie gets shot in the shoulder with an arrow, and that introduces, there's this little gameplay mechanic where it's like, okay, hold R1 to pull the arrow out, because you'll get shot by other arrows if you're not careful, and that's just a cool way they do that. So as soon as the arrow went in, I was like, oh, okay, I see you're using that now to park Dina, because, and again, this is the bit that I was kind of waiting for. I was like, okay, how, given that you now have three characters instead of one, how is Ellie going to end up, I know she has to go back through the hospital, and she has to go back to Nora, and then Spores, and then that bit. So how does that all happen with a, let's say, fully fit Jesse and Dina? Mm-hmm. But then you kind of, yeah, move the arrow from Ellie's shoulder to Dina's leg, you use that to then push Jesse and Dina away, and then Ellie spots the, I love the bit of when she kind of spots that gate as well, and it's the kind of, because there's a few moments where they do it in this episode where the revenge thing clicks back into Ellie's mind. And I like the way they do that here as well. So, because speaking of that, I should have included the notes from the theatre, because she plays that piece of music, which is very important as well. She plays a few bits of that piece of music. And again, there's that shot of her in the mind of kind of remembering the sort of revenge mission. And there's about four or five times they kind of do that bit in the show as well, which I thought they did very, very well with. But yeah, sees the gate, and then Nora's just on her mind, and she's got to pursue that, and she's got to continue with it. So, any thoughts on all that? I know I mentioned a lot of stuff there. So,
not really. I mean, it is quite interesting how they are still managing to use the game mechanics, but sort of twisting them into a slightly different situation. You know, but those game mechanic stuff is still in there, which is quite clever. You know, I mean, there are points, as I said before, where even though I've not played the game, there are points where they're crawling through something, you're like, okay, so that looks like it's ripped straight out of the video game, because I can see that working. But yeah, so it's interesting when they take one of the small game mechanics and like move it somewhere else, or do something slightly different with it to make it work.
I think the important part is as well, even though you've moved like the arrow hitting somebody else and Dina goes with her, and you move the death conversation and you move Jesse, but you still have him save them, you still ultimately end up where you need to narratively, which is Ellie alone with Nora. Because even once you've got to that moment and everything before it, even though they happen in different ways, you still end up in the same spot, which I think is very important. Because when they're in the woods, I'm like, okay, how are we going to get, quote unquote, get rid of, not kill, but get rid of Jesse and Dina here? Because there was no, up until the arrow, there was really no reason for them to
separate
stuff. So yeah, you ended up back in the same spot, but you moved things around, which is very cool. So it continues her journey alone. At Lake Hill, Ellie holds Nora at gunpoint to interrogate her for Abby's whereabouts. Nora fakes an apology for the brutality of Jill's death before taunting her about it. When Nora fights back and escapes, Ellie gives chase, evading the WLF soldiers firing at her. As Nora escapes through the sealed-off elevator shaft, little gameplay nod of holding triangle to wedge open doors when people are chasing after you. Very, very nice. Apart from it's Nora doing it instead of Ellie, because she needs to. It falls and leads her to the basement. Again, B2, not B3. We're not going to B3 yet, or at the moment. It falls and leads her to the basement. Ellie follows her and discovers infected WLF soldiers, including poor old Leon. Sorry, I had to leave your son behind, that guy. There's a little, I think it's L Park on his name tag thing. Leon's there. Whose body exhale cordyceps spores infecting Nora, but not Ellie, because she's our special immune person. Yeah, there's a bunch of, like, not necessarily, I mean, in terms of remixes, there's no remixes here, really, which is, you know, from here on out is exactly the same as the game. Now, again, seeing the kind of, if you want to call it courtyard, I don't know what the correct term is, of like this WLF soldier with the dogs. I told you all the dogs were going to show up at one point. It's just that Ellie doesn't have to kill this one. Doesn't have to do what I do, which is kill a dog with a shotgun. So
yeah,
but shotgun's your best friend in the game. Why would you use anything else? So they even had. I didn't expect them to go this far, because in terms of the set design, from here until the end of the Nora scene is spectacular. The way that they've recreated this, the hospital looks exactly the same. The, as they like to call it, red room area is exactly the same with the double doors. They even included, there's this little watchtower thing with a sniper, which that's in the, I didn't expect them to maybe, I didn't know how far they were going to go in terms of, okay, you include the set that looks the same, like the hospital, but which different parts of it are you going to include? Yeah, they even included that bit as well. There's a few little nods as well to kind of hiding in tall grass, which is wasn't introduced in... I mean, for Last of Us, it was introduced in Last of Us 2, but it actually comes from Uncharted 4 and then Lost Legacy. They both use tall grass for, like, stealth sections. Again, that development line kind of following through with that kind of their games boring different stuff. When she's sitting in that tall grass and then the dog starts to sniff you out. So yeah, lots and lots of really great kind of gameplay nods again with the door, the kind of I think in some of the games you would like tap the button, in some of the games you would hold it and then you would just kind of, can you wedge the door open before the enemies get to you? So that was really nice to see. Ellie running through the hospital area. I recognize exactly where that was. That was in one of like their first gameplay demos. So that's in here. That is exactly the same. Even the part of, because you do chase Nora, obviously, in the game as well. Even the part where, you know, she shouts to the soldiers up the top and she's like, shoot her, shoot her. They're up there, same spot, looks the same. There's even a few like bits of boxes and stuff afterwards that you climb through. Climb over, climb through, whatever, climb in between. That's there. The only tiny little difference, and it's not a complaint at all, it's just an observation. You know when Nora turns around and there's, I think it's a wheelchair, she tries to push that into her. There's a, do you call it girder? You know, like a hospital bed.
Gurney.
She pushes that flat against the door, and what you have to do, you have to vault over that. So I thought that was like their nod to that little bit, because she pushes it kind of into and you have to climb over it. And then yeah, then you are led down to the basement with Nora, and yeah, pretty much exactly the same in the game. Very, very, very impressive. And again, in terms of just bringing this game to life with this part, I mean, the woods and the Seraphites looks the same as well. You just have the different kind of remixes there. So very, very, very impressed with all that. Before we get to the Nora conversation. Yeah, David, for yourself, what did you think of all the build up and seeing bits of the hospital and seeing a dog as well and everything else?
Well, yeah, I mean, the the build up to the hospital sequence, I think is just really well done. As somebody, as we've said, no, I don't play the game, but it's interesting how some bits are so ripped directly from the game, and then some bits they've sort of remixed and changed, and they've moved things around. And but then there are still some elements which are, okay, this is almost a set piece that is exactly like identical to the game, which I think is kind of interesting. So, yeah, and I mean, it all flows really well. It all fits together really well. The falling into the basement, this nice little change with how they're dealing with the cordyceps, with the fact that they're sort of disseminated by the lungs of the surviving infected. That's how they're getting airborne. Is that, you know, it's not the plants themselves, it's not the sort of mushroom things themselves that are making it airborne. It's the fact that they've absorbed basically these bodies, and the bodies are using the lungs to expel the spores, which I think is a really nice way of doing it. I think there is actually a quote from Neil saying, I wish we'd actually done that in the game.
Yeah, he said that on the really podcast. Cool.
Yeah.
I love those moments when Neil's like, damn, Craig, that was a really good idea. We could have done that in the game. So, yeah, very, very nice. Yes. So, yeah.
So, I kind of like that. You know, that they're coming up with stuff that he's like going, that's an excellent idea. But yeah, so because obviously they had to change that to make it work. But I do, I think that's it scientifically that sort of feels, I mean, I don't know, I'm not a biologist, I don't know the science behind it, but it sort of feels like it's right, you know, it feels like a way that should work. So yeah, I rather like that.
Fantastic the way they did this bit. Speaking of the, I know I just talked to a lot about the hospital and the gameplay stuff and that, but yeah, seeing Ellie go down here, and it's interesting from a gamer standpoint of, we know what they look like in the game, the spores. And we've seen the kind of, you know, bodies be stuck to something, however you would describe that. And then the kind of bits coming out. I really like, I don't know if this is the right term to use, this kind of mouth mechanic of they're literally breathing the bits out and you like see it on the screen. I think that was a really, really great way to do that. Because if they then have the infection of what's going on, which they do, how else would you kind of display it being pushed into the air? And I think that was a really, really great way to kind of do that. So because there's a few different bits here going on in terms of, this is Ellie's first time discovering it, this is TV only people's first time discovering it, and for gamers it's kind of, this is our first in first time witnessing it being introduced into the show, but then seeing the kind of like slight bits of differences again with the kind of mouth mechanic going on. I also thought just on screen the bits that are already in the air, so not just the puff parts or however you would describe that, but the bits that are already in the air, how that looked against everything else. Because one of the challenges they've got in this show, and they've done it fantastically so far, where you have such a grounded, realistic looking world, which is part of bringing the game to make it look real and make it look like real life, where you've got that up against things like bloaters and spores and all these other different infected things, and then the kind of where you also have things like, okay, it's normal to kind of see, let's say, overgrowth, like where things have naturally overgrown over cars and stuff, but then that against like other cordyceps bits, and how the kind of Last of Us part looks against the real world, if you know what I mean, how that's been displayed on screen, I think just looks really, really fantastic. So knocked out of the park with this, I think. So because you know, there's a chance that you try and go gritty, grounded, realistic with this, and then you include this thing into it, and then maybe it just like doesn't look right or something. So very, very good. All right, we're ready to move on to the dark parts here of the episode. Nora realizes Ellie is the immune girl from whom Joel had killed the Fireflies, including Abby's father, who sought to develop a cure for the fungus. To Nora's shock, Ellie reveals, she already knows, don't really care, I'm just here for you, about Joel's actions before picking up a pipe and beginning to brutally torch Nora for Abby's whereabouts. Again, pretty much line for line in the game. By the way, the little bit before, I should have mentioned this as well, you know, when she was saying, like, hey, do you remember me, all this kind of bit, like when she first meets Nora, that's again pretty much line for line, scene for scene, especially the sort of, hey, do you remember me, yeah, you remember me, about his screams and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
so that's pretty much shot for shot from the game as well. And then yeah, just bit by bit, she kind of, I found it interesting, Nora's kind of trying to convince her of, not to not kill Nora, because Nora's going to die anyway, because she's breathing in spores, that's just how that works, but trying to get into Ellie's head of, like, what this is what I know, how are you going to react to that in regards to Joel and the whole main thing that's going on and the reason that Ellie's there in the first place. And big credit to both of them, but big credit particularly for Bella here. A lot of gamers are kind of wondered in terms of when Ellie goes on this dark path, and of course Gail's had a thing or two to say about, like, oh, she was always next to Joel in terms of that and all that sort of thing. The way Bella does this bit and the previous bit, particularly this bit, the kind of, I don't know how to really describe it, it's not a lot of kind of, she doesn't shout at Nora, really. It's more just kind of, yeah, I know. Yeah, but where's Abby? You know, you're telling me things I already know. You don't know necessarily that I know. You're trying to convince me in that way. Cool, that's all great. But where's Nora? Where's Abby? I just love the way that Bella does that. And this scene particular, because I watched the episode 3 times, but this scene particular, I tried to really pay attention to what Bella's doing with her facial acting here, and the kind of just stonewall, because it is different to what Ashley's trying to do, or what Ashley does as Ellie in the scene. But again, you've got to take it as she's not trying to copy what Ashley's doing, she's trying to give her own interpretation, which I think people need to kind of remember as well. But just like, yeah, I know. You know that that's not really what I'm here for. I just tell me where Abby is. And then we get into the kind of, I think it was 3 hits, right? And then the anger just picks up a bit more after each one. And I really, really love, it's one of my favourite moments of the episode, the shouty scream, the last bit, the where is she? I love the way that Bella pulls that off and just keeps smacking her with that pipe. And yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. So in terms of people being, you know, wondered about, like, hey, why is, you know, Ellie so happy? Or, like, you wouldn't want her to be doing that throughout the whole episode. Because then the bits with Dina early also don't work if she's got this stonewall revenge the whole episode. That doesn't really work in the Dina scenes, for example, like with the triangulation and all the other conversations. So, but as I say, this is kind of that mask slipping off, I think. And again, if you kind of remember and point to when I mentioned throughout the episode, there's like 4 or 5 different times Ellie sort of pauses herself doing something or looks like at the hospital gate, and then there's just the remembering, and then there's just that, it's like it's loading the sort of anger parts, which is very, very important for where Ellie goes in this story. That's not actually the end of the episode, which I thought it might be. We'll talk about the other bit in a minute. Just talk about the gameplay stuff for a second. So as you kind of do with certain Naughty Dog games, they're cinematic and kind of interactive in certain ways. The camera cuts to, like, facing Ellie, and it gives you this, you know, particular type of music, and a square prompt comes up at one point. This is when she's holding the pipe, Nora's against the door choking or whatever it is she's doing, and I think you do 3 hits still, but I think you can actually wait with that scene for as long as you want. It will just, it won't do anything else, but you actually do press square for each hit, and then you just get the 3 smacks, and it cuts after that bit. So just excellent. So anyway, David, what did you think of what happens here?
Yeah, I mean, it's a strong scene, and it sort of mirrors what happened to Joel to a certain extent as well, you know, with Abby kind of smashing his legs before she eventually sort of kills him. And so it's nice the way that is kind of mirrored. And I mean, of course, there's no incentive really for Nora other than the pain that she's about to get from it. there's no real incentive for Nora to give up Abby because Nora is dead already. So, you know, she's not going to make it out of there. She's breathing in spores. There's no way she can go back up because she'd be breathing spores over everybody else. So, I mean, there's just nothing she can do. Mm. But yeah, and this sort of realization of who Ellie actually is, and then trying to explain. And I agree with you. I like the way Bella plays this sort of matter of fact of like, I know, tell me where she is. And that I think just works so well. It comes across as, you know, Ellie's just seeing red and it's cold and it's, you know, she just wants the information. And it's really, really well done, and it's brutal, and, you know, it does make me wonder what's going to happen when she does actually catch up with Abby. You know, it's just really, really well acted. It's a solid scene, I think. I don't know what else to say, really. I just really, really like that scene, and yeah, it's a good place to nearly end the episode.
I tell you what, on my second and third watches, not because I forgot about the next bit, but because it feels like a natural end to the episode, I was almost, because I was like kind of sitting down or whatever watching this bit, as soon as that cut to black, for some reason on my second and even again on my third watch, I got up to like switch the episode off, and I was like, oh yeah, this bit with Joel and Ellie in a second. So I'll talk about that in a minute. But for the moment for me is kind of that last, where is she, the scream and then the smack of, yeah, like that's the moment for me. The bits before that were all kind of like really, really great build up of like the Stonewall kind of, Where's Abby stuff?
I mean, the other thing is, of course, this is the first time, because we discussed this a few episodes ago about, well, does Ellie know? Doesn't she know? You know, because when we left them at the end of season one, he hadn't actually told her, and we didn't know whether she believed him. I mean, maybe we will now find out that he had actually confessed about it, and that's what caused this sort of fracture between them. But we've got possibly that to fall out, but it's interesting that this is the first time we actually have found out that Ellie does know, presuming she was telling the truth. But you know, Ellie, she seemed to be, she's like, yeah, I know what he did. I think that's and we know that Joel hasn't really spread that around too much because of that conversation that, I mean, it seems Tommy knew, but Tommy had that conversation with the therapist when they were sat watching the ball game, and they were talking about, you know, Joel saving Ellie's life, there's sort of, I don't know whether that's going to get explored a bit more, but this is the first time we've actually heard her admit that she knew what Joel had done.
I'm interested. It's interesting the way that's been, you know, all the way back in episode one, that barn scene, and you can kind of tell she's carrying something with her, because even though she's kind of was annoyed at Jesse for like, hey, why did the guy hold back? Oh, I didn't want Joel bugging me, and you know, she was like, hey, no, you shouldn't have done that. And that's been, she's just been carrying that this whole time, pretty much. Or at least since that moment. And you can kind of tell, like, okay, so there's something off, and then they have she has their argument with Joel at the dance with the whole Seth thing. So that's been sitting there, and obviously that's built up to, again, the sort of that last, where is she, and the anger actually fully coming out. So not too shabby, not too shabby. Very, very well done indeed. And we will see... where this continues. But we do have one more actual scene to talk about. It's very, very short, but important. In a flashback, and no, it's not, we haven't woken up from a dream. Ellie's not woken up from a dream. Some people did joke of like, oh, it was all a dream. Joel's alive. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
So No, we're not doing. Was it Dallas? Which show was it that did
the
famous?
Yes, it was Dallas that retconned an entire season into a dream of Bobby season, Ewing in the shower. Yeah, it was an entire season.
I know you told me
season.
That before, but that's yes. still mad to me. Yeah.
Yes, they retconned an entire season because having Bobby Ewing like sort of appear in the shower, and it turns out that it had all been a dream sequence for the entire season, I think.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, that strikes me as pretty mad. So, yeah, yes. In a flashback, Ellie wakes up in Jackson, Wyoming, and is greeted by Joel. Hey, kiddo, what are you doing? And she wakes up completely, obviously, different attitude for obvious reasons. And that's, again, this kind of, you know, the flipping back and forth between the happy, the nice times, and obviously the bad times. I think putting these two bits together also does a great way of showing not just what Bella is doing as Ellie, but Ellie as a character, because you've seen this build up from episode 1 to episode 5 of this anger sitting there and kind of building up, obviously following from Joel's death. And now effectively you're rewinding all of that even before, obviously episode 1, cutting to this moment and, yeah, completely different Ellie and just waking up, everything's fine, nothing bad has really happened, Joel's here. Life, you know, sun's shining, the life is good. So, hey, everybody wanted Joel back, so here you go.
Yeah.
What do you think of this lovely actual end of the episode?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Even though it's very, very short, you do see this marked shift in how Bella is playing Ellie, even just with that little bit. And it's really lovely to sort of see almost season one version of Ellie rather than this kind of hardened season two version. So I think that's kind of interesting. And seeing Joel back, and from what I hear, I know there are trailers around, I think I haven't actually watched anything, but it does seem like the next episode is basically going to be a flashback episode, as far as I can tell. So which would make sense given where we've ended this one. So, yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to that. And we did predict that there was going to be a flashback episode because there is a certain character which is listed in the character list with an actor attached to it. Husband
you're
of the,
about, right?
Yeah, Eugene, yeah. The husband of the therapist. And he's listed with an actor playing him. So presumably it's going to be that we are covering. In some way, but yeah, we'll have to wait and see next week.
Yeah, we'll see where that all goes. All right, that's the end of the episode. If you want to write in, let us know your thoughts on the episode. Are you enjoying the show? If you're not, you don't, just because I do, that doesn't mean that you have to. If there's anything you're not liking about the show, whatever, let us know what your thoughts are so far, because we're actually almost at the end. Not the end of the game, we've got a ways to go yet, but that's what more seasons are for. Anyway, let us know your thoughts, feelings, questions, comments on The Last of Us and all those bits. Again, if you've got any spoiler predictions, throw them my way and I'll put those into those spoiler predictions episodes. Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org, social media eTalkUK or Entertainment Talk, and there's information in your show notes. Josh writes in and says, would you say you prefer or like the second half of the game more than the first? Now I'm thinking about what I can actually talk about for the second half of the game and what that actually is, or what all of you think that might be. They're about equal to me, maybe the first half a bit more, maybe. Yeah, my answer would be maybe the first half, but I can't honestly dig into that more until we see the rest of it. So yeah, and David, you can't really answer this question, so
no.
Yeah,
not at all.
But yeah, just thinking back on certain moments from second half, first half, yeah, maybe it's because we're watching the first half and that's more kind of on my mind at the moment, but that's my answer could change, but that's what I go with at the moment. Zach with a K says, Matt, if a season 5 happened, we're four, maybe 4 years away from season 4, let alone 5, If a season 5 happens and it goes past The Last of Us 2, but Neil gives the go-ahead with what his Last of Us 3 idea would have been, would you like that? So I think what you're asking is that, okay, if we get seasons 3 and 4 and that covers the full rest of part 2, and then Neil's got an idea for part 3, again, he's probably got notes somewhere in his office about part 3. I doubt that he's never written anything down for the game. Would I be happy if that gets adapted? So into season 5 instead of adapting from a part 3? I don't know. I mean, it would be more Last of Us, which obviously wouldn't complain about. It would feel very different, though. I think that's the main thing. It would feel, especially for me, it would feel quite different. For like TV-only people, it would almost not make any difference, really, because you've got nothing to kind of reference from. Not just you, David, but everyone else who's only TV-only people. You'd have nothing to kind of reference wrong. I guess you could then also stop all the moaning about, like, hey, you're doing this bit wrong, you're doing that bit wrong, because then there wouldn't be any examples to come off
of.
That's not the purpose, to please those people, I suppose. I would rather you did that than not at all, if that makes sense. It would just feel different, and I don't know what that would feel like yet, because I don't know what that feeling is like. So... David, what do you think of that idea?
I have more faith in Craig and Neil.
Oh yeah, yeah.
To do it right than I did with the certain other HBO franchise that went horribly, horribly wrong once they got past the books. So from that point of view, I don't necessarily have an issue with it. It's just going to be a little weird if they then bring the game out and the game does it different. You know, he's obviously going to be a slightly different adaptation because he's going to have that backwards. Which is not necessarily a problem. It's just you're going to have the same arguments. I mean, you say, oh, well, you know, at least they're not going to get people ready. They will. They'll just get them moaning at them the other way around. Yeah, because you took this from the TV show and you didn't put this bit in and all that sort of stuff. I think it's difficult. And I mean, Neil has said that they're not going to do that. I mean, who knows if HBO throw enough money at them, maybe he will say yes, but I kind of would prefer it if they didn't and they waited until a third game appeared before they actually kind of came out with the TV show. You could potentially be in a situation where the game is developed enough that you could develop the TV show alongside it and have them almost released simultaneously, possibly. But, I don't know. I don't play the game. So, as you say, to me, it doesn't necessarily make a huge amount of difference. And I have faith in the showrunners that they will make a good, decent quality TV show. But... I kind of, because it is an adaptation, part of me kind of wants it to stay as an adaptation.
Yeah.
So I would say I'm not going to complain with more of it, but it feels a little off doing that. I would rather they stuck to their guns and didn't go past what the game releases are. I think.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, we'll see in several years if they change or whatever, if they do that.
Yeah.
Ethan says, was hesitant to write in, but I can't help but also want to poke David with questions, as I agree, it's a fun idea. You've given your death predictions, but who do you think survives, let's say, to the end of season 3?
I would assume Ellie survives. That's the only one that I would... say likely to survive, and maybe some of the people that are back in Jackson still. I think in terms of people in danger, because they're not safe in Jackson, I mean, Tommy, Dina, Jesse, I think are potentially in danger. I wouldn't be surprised if one or three of them end up getting killed at some point. I don't want that to happen, and I hope that that is the case. But given that they are wandering around in a very dangerous environment, it wouldn't surprise me if that happens. I kind of hope that they keep Tommy around, because having lost Joel, you know, it would be nice to keep Tommy around. In terms of the others, I don't know. I get the feeling that things aren't going to be as straightforward with Abby when Ellie gets there, of Ellie just turning up, killing her, and it's done. So I do wonder if maybe Abby survives for some reason, but I don't know. And we don't know where this season is going to end. Did he say by the end of season 3 or season 2? Because
3, yeah.
Yeah,
so by the end of, I guess that's because what it's been
I mean, I don't know, just because, so I mean, the only one I would actually assume survives is Ellie. Although, I mean, even that's not necessarily guaranteed. I mean, you know, look at, we lost Joel. You could easily end up with somebody else taking over as the lead, although I think that would be quite surprising. But who knows? Ellie's the only one that I think probably survives right till the end, unless she somehow sacrifices herself to save Dina, maybe, in some way, or Tommy, or, you know, so I don't know. I think it's one of those shows, a bit like The Walking Dead was. It's one of those shows where nobody's really necessarily safe. So it's very difficult to say this person will survive.
Just on The Walking Dead stuff and the deaths on there, while I liked on Walking Dead where it was kind of, hey, in the comic books, this person dies here, but they switch it around because of whatever, and that actually worked quite interestingly well. The show, at least so far, it doesn't seem to be kind of like, for example, where you have Joel dying, it wasn't like, oh, let's pick someone else instead. But then, like, for that scene, that also doesn't make sense because Abby's solely going for Joel. So if it was, let's say, Jesse or Dina, for example, she wasn't after them two. It was solely Joel because of what he did. So that almost wouldn't make like any sense plot-wise. Like if Jesse's there on the floor and she's like beating Jesse to death with a golf club or something, of like, hey, you killed my dad, and he's like, I don't even know who that is. So
yeah.
So I'm glad that, then again, that wouldn't make like any sense at all.
Yes,
so
plus, I mean, The Walking Dead had a very mixed success with changing up character deaths, because sometimes it made sense, sometimes it made no sense at all, Carl. So, you know, it does rather, you know, I mean, that show, I get what you're saying, but, you know, that they are sort of sticking to it. And I think it depends. Like you say, it needs to make sense narratively for that to actually work. So
yeah, like if I was watching the, like, let's say the second episode as a gamer, and all of a sudden Abby whacks Dean around the head, I would be like, what are you doing?
Right.
You know. So yeah, the only sole one that's been a bit different, and it's fine, is Bill, because obviously Frank still goes in the game, but that's different now. That had its own particular purpose, plus throughout the entirety, like when you see Bill for the last time in the first game, which is simply him walking away from Joel and he goes on his way with Ellie, you don't see him again in part two anyway, so that was fine to do. And again, that wasn't a sort of, hey, someone died here, let's switch that around so it's someone else. It's, you're telling a love story there, and it's got its own reasons. So
yeah,
there we go. Right, last question. Abed writes in and says, if David randomly interviewed Neil, so Neil Druckmann, I assume, would Matt be annoyed at him? No, I have no reason to be annoyed. I'd be very curious, as, like, if you suddenly, let's say, turn around to me, say, hey, I've recorded a full interview with Neil Druckmann, I'd be like, cool, what did you ask him? I mean, because there was a situation where, because you ended up with the John Piano interview that had come to you, and then you said, hey, because obviously my relationship with the game and that, you said, hey, what about if you join me for that so that I could pose questions as well? Now, if it was a case, let's say that time or some sort of NDA or some sort of other reason where it's like I couldn't be in that, I would understand. I wouldn't be like, David, what the hell are you doing? I wouldn't do that. So,
yeah.
I mean, you've interviewed loads of people that I haven't been there on the thing for. So
When the interviews come to me, if it's something that I don't know anything or I don't know a huge amount about, I have passed it across. Like, there was the Toy Story guy, I think, was did you get that? I can't remember whether that came directly to you, whether I passed that over to you, but because you did the Toy Story interview, didn't you? But there have been times where
That was Angus McLean for Lightyear.
That
was I grabbed that because he happened to reply to a tweet of mine where he was talking about Lightyear, and then DMs followed, and
there have been points where I've had something come to me and it's a subject that I didn't know anything really about, like it's anime or something, and I've contacted somebody else, other people that that know more about it, and said, look, I know nothing about this subject, do you want to talk to them? And then I will run the podcast. I've done it with Bex, and I did it with Bex in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So there have been occasions where I've done things like that, and certainly if I got offered a Neil Druckmann interview, I'd probably either get you to come on with me, or if for some reason that couldn't happen, I would just take a bunch of questions from you. And so I've got something sort of ask and explain the situation and sort of say, one of my co-hosts is obviously is a massive fan of the game, whereas I've only played the first one. Here are some questions from him. And so then I would do some research around what the questions are that you want to ask. So you would be involved in some way if that ever actually happened. Those interviews do come up sometimes. And I'm always happy to find somebody that knows the subject matter to do the interviews if it's not something that I know anything about, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I appreciate that, by the way. Thank you.
Yeah,
And I would do the same if, let's say, what's something that you're really into that I'm, let's say like X-Files or something. Like, I've never seen an episode, for example.
Right, okay.
So I would do the same thing. If those popped up, see, I wouldn't necessarily be in those circles for that to happen. Like, there wouldn't really be someone, let's say past, present or future at the moment, who's worked on X-Files, just an example, to then come to me. Like, that wouldn't really happen in kind of the same way. But if it ever did, I would do the same thing. So, heck, if it was something I, let's say, knew literally nothing about and I knew that you're a big fan of, I would just give it to you and not even need to be there anyway. So,
yeah. And then all we do with that is when those sort of things happen, if the person that's doing the interview has a podcast feed as well, we just say, look, we'll just put it out on both feeds. And, so in a case of something like that, it would go out on the Entertainment Talk feed. I have done that before where I've recorded an interview with somebody that's had something to do with like Walking Dead or something like that. And I've kind of edited the interview, put it up on the Geek Town feed and gone, here you are, here's the interview, put it out on your feed if you want. We've done that before.
Yeah, you did do that once before, didn't you?
Yeah, we have done that before.
It was that family. They all of them ended up on the... I can't remember what their names were now. But
it was the Lince family. Was it for that? Yes. Maddie Lince, who is on Bosch, plays the daughter on Bosch, but was also on Walking Dead. And her two brothers played the old and young version of Henry.
There
is a video version of that. If you are a Walking Dead fan, by the way, you go and look for the Walking Dead on the Geek Town YouTube channel. There is a video of that, and it's hilarious, that interview, because the entire thing, Maddie and the older brother spend half the interview trying to make sure the younger brother doesn't say something that's going to get him in trouble or sued by the network. Because it's really funny, that interview, because they're just like, because he was, I don't know, 12 or something at the time, and it was
right
great, that interview. I really enjoyed that. But yeah, I mean, there have been cases where we've interviewed a few people, you know, and sometimes they're appropriate to sort of, you know, if it's something that I know you've done a podcast on, like, you know, Yellow Jackets, or because you're now doing that. Had you been doing that at the time when I was in, when we recorded Ella Purnell, I probably would have passed some of that stuff on to you. But if you are a fan of Yellow Jackets, there are Ella Purnell things up on the YouTube channel as well. Yeah.
Cool. Nice. So yeah, hopefully that answers your question. What I meant is, I'd also be curious as to, like, okay, I know what I'd ask Neil, but what would you ask him, and kind of listening to that. So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I would probably stick more to the TV kind of stuff, obviously.
Yeah,
And you know, talk my way around that. I think, and trying to see if I can wheel out of him whether they are actually going to do a third game or not.
Yeah. Cool. All right. That's the end of the episode. We move into the penultimate episode of season 2 next week. It will be on Sunday, of course, and all that. And then the same rigmarole will happen as it does on all the weeks. So look out for the spoiler-free review. Then, depending on exactly what we get in the episode, because I can guess, which is the whole point of the predictions, but I don't know what will happen in the episode. Then we'll do the spoiler predictions, and then we'll be back here. Remember, Thursday. You can do Thursday, can't you, next week? I haven't actually asked you yet.
Yes, should be fine.
Yeah. Do you know what it is? Because we're so bad, I keep somewhat forgetting we're in the cup final. So, yeah, I also just, it's just weird that that's on a Wednesday. I just keep forgetting that as well. So,
yeah.
Anyway, yeah, look out for that. And yeah, by the time we actually do the episode 6 review, Man United will or won't have a trophy. So we'll mention that as well, I suppose, as well at some point. But yeah, stay tuned to entertainmenttalk.org and the podcast platforms for all of our TV, games, films, and Man United podcasts. So look out for all of those. If you want to support what we do, of course, listen to more episodes, word of mouth, social media, and all that sort of stuff. If you can do that, if someone mentioned something we podcasted on, like The Last of Us or anything else like that, please tell them about said podcast. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers for the free podcast review options. Look for that as well if you'd like to. TV and film news, Geek Town Radio, which as of yesterday is a new one. David, that's over on your side. So what's happening with Geek Town?
Quite a lot at the moment, actually, because we are in Upfront, which is when they announce the basically all their cancelled and shows on the and renewed shows on the US networks. So the podcast this week, Gray was on. We ran through everything that was cancelled and renewed at that point from the main networks. Netflix have actually just done their Upfronts tonight as we're recording this on the Wednesday. So there will be a bunch of Netflix stuff going up fairly soon, I think. So we talked a bit about that on the podcast, about the BAFTAs as well. And I tested an Apple Vision Pro VR headset as well. So we're review of that. There is also an After the TV Bloodbath post on the website where you can go through and see all the shows that were renewed and cancelled up on there. There's been some Marvel news today as well about air dates for Ironheart and Jessica Jones returning to Daredevil. And there's a new Superman trailer out and lots more stuff, as well as sort of, but yeah, a lot of renewals and cancellations and air dates and a lot of things floating around right now. So it's worth going to check the website out for things that are coming up on TV and air dates for shows and things.
Cool. Yeah, so go and check out Geek Town Radio from yesterday and on Tuesdays, and then keep your eyes on geektown.co.uk for all of that news. We're also on YouTube as well for random gameplay bits and pieces and videos and some streams and other things like that. And that's Entertainment Talk Plays on YouTube. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week for the penultimate episode already. That's gone too quick. But yes, we'll see what happens then. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.